Okay, so, one thing that always gets me thinking as a law student is how often these cases really highlight the tension between, protecting individual businesses and that broader focus on like consumer welfare and overall competition in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Today's case is, well, it kind of dives headfirst into those tricky waters.
It really does. And I think it'll give anyone listening, especially those of you who are deep in your antitrust studies, a lot to chew on. So welcome to the deep dive where we, pick apart these fascinating legal battles and try to figure out what they really tell us about the law. And today we're looking at the Second Circuit case that popped up, E&L Consulting versus Doman Industries. It really digs into those really important questions about antitrust law, especially when it comes to exclusive distributorships. And, what happens when one of the companies involved already has like a ton of power in the market?
Right, exactly. And I think this case, it's not just about who wins and who loses. I mean, it forces us to think about like the big picture, right? Like, what are the goals of antitrust law? Are we trying to protect individual businesses from getting squeezed out? Or are we mainly focused on making sure that, that market as a whole stays competitive so consumers benefit in the end?
For sure. Yeah, that tension is definitely there, kind of bubbling under the surface of a lot of these antitrust cases. And this one is it's a perfect example of that. But before we, go too deep down the rabbit hole, let's set the scene here. What exactly was going on with E&L Consulting and Doman Industries?
Okay, so picture this. You've got E&L Consulting, and they're operating under this name, CBC Lumber Co. They're a lumber distributor, and for a long time, going back to like 1990, they've been the ones distributing Doman Industries lumber, specifically this green hemp fir lumber in the northeastern U.S. So we're talking, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania.
Okay, so they've got this pretty solid relationship going, distributing this this specific type of lumber in a pretty major region.
Right. But, things weren't always smooth sailing. Initially, they were working under like these consignment agreements, which can be a bit, loosey goosey. But then in 2003, like January of 2003, they finally like put pen to paper. They signed this formal 3-year distribution contract, and it's got a standard 90-day termination clause built in, just in case.
Yeah. Standard stuff. So they're, thinking, OK, we're locked in for 3 years. This is great.
You'd think so, right?
But that's not quite how it played out.
No, no, not at all. 2004 rolls around, January 2004, and boom, Doman just terminates the agreement. And the reason they give is a breach of contract, but the details are like super vague. We don't really know what exactly E&L supposedly did wrong.
Oh, the plot thickens.
It does. And to make things even more interesting, at the same time that they're cutting E&L off, Doman appoints a new exclusive distributor. This company called Sherwood Lumber. And Sherwood, they're not just taking over E&L's old territory, they're getting the whole region. So all the areas that used to be served by like Atlantic Coast Lumber Co. and Futterer Lumber too, it's all going to Sherwood.
Whoa, so Doman's really consolidating things here, going all in on Sherwood. And what about E&L? They're just left high and dry.
That's what they claimed. E&L said Doman didn't just end the contract. They actively blocked them from finding other suppliers. Like, they were shut out of the game completely. And they also said that as soon as Sherwood took over, prices for that green hemp fir lumber in the region went up. Like a noticeable jump, something like 20%.
Ouch. That's like a pretty big hit to consumers if that's true.
Yeah, and you can see why E&L felt like something shady was going on. Like, Doman breaks the contract, brings in this new exclusive distributor, allegedly tries to prevent them from getting lumber elsewhere, and suddenly prices go way up. It does seem like a pretty classic antitrust scenario.
It does, doesn't it?
Mm.
So, okay, they decide to fight back, right?
They do. They file a bunch of federal antitrust claims against Doman and Sherwood. And these are some serious allegations, hitting them with violations of, like, the Sherman Act, the Robinson-Patman Act, even the Clayton Act.
Wow, the full arsenal.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The district court wasn't buying it. They dismissed every single one of the federal antitrust claims.
Oh, that's a tough blow.
It is. But, that's not the end of the story. E&L, they appealed that decision to the Second Circuit. And it's the Second Circuit ruling that really dives into those meaty antitrust questions and clarifies, like, what actually flies in these exclusive distributorship situations.
Right. So let's get into it. Starting with the Sherman Act, Section 1, right?
Right. That was a big one. E&L's argument was basically that This exclusive distributorship agreement between Doman and Sherwood was, you know, an unreasonable restraint of trade. They were saying, look, this is stifling competition, it's hurting us, and it's probably hurting consumers too.
Which, on the face of it, like, that sounds like a pretty solid antitrust argument. I mean, if a company is using its power to limit competition and drive up prices, shouldn't that be illegal?
You'd think so, right? And that's kind of where it gets tricky, because what the Second Circuit really emphasized was that under antitrust law, exclusive distributorships, they're not automatically bad.
Really? Even if they lead to, like, higher prices or fewer choices for buyers?
Even then, they're actually, like, presumptively legal. And this is a key point for any budding antitrust lawyers out there. The burden of proof is really high on the person who's challenging these agreements.
So E&L, they really had to bring the receipts.
Oh, absolutely. The court basically said, look, just because one competitor, in this case E&L, is feeling the squeeze doesn't mean the entire market is suffering. They made a really important distinction between harm to a competitor and harm to competition overall. To win, E&L had to prove that this exclusive deal was hurting competition across the whole market, not just their own bottom line.
Okay, I'm starting to see where they might have run into trouble.
Yeah, and there's another crucial factor here. Market power. Remember, Doman Industries, they weren't just any lumber company. They held a whopping 95% market share in green hem fir lumber. Essentially, they were the big dog.
So like a near monopoly.
Pretty much. And because of that, the court basically reasoned that switching from one distributor to another, even if it was exclusive, didn't really change the competitive landscape all that much. Doman already controlled prices and output. They were calling the shots, whether it was E&L or Sherwood distributing their lumber.
Okay, I see the logic there. So even if E&L was feeling the pain, the court was saying, well, Doman already had so much power that this change probably didn't make things significantly worse for competition overall. So their argument under Section 1, it just didn't hold water.
It didn't. And their Section 2 claim, the one about Doman actually monopolizing the market, that also hit a wall.
Right, because to win a monopolization claim, you need to show more than just having a big market share, right?
Exactly. Two things have to be proven. First, yeah, you got to have that monopoly power, which Doman clearly did. But second, you have to prove that the company willfully acquired or maintained that power through, like, actively anti-competitive actions. They can't just be big. They got to be playing dirty, too.
So did E&L manage to show that Doman was being anti-competitive?
They tried. One of their arguments was that Doman was unlawfully reserving shipping capacity, essentially preventing others from getting their lumber to market. But the court wasn't convinced. They said Doman was just using that capacity for their own shipping needs, which is, you know, pretty standard business practice.
Yeah, makes sense. So no smoking gun there.
Nope. And the key takeaway here is that the court was really focused on whether Doman's actions were expanding their existing monopoly. Just switching distributors didn't really do that. They already had the market locked down, regardless of who was actually selling their lumber.
Okay, so that covers their Sherman Act claims. But they had a few other arrows in their quiver, right?
Yeah.
What about that tying arrangement argument?
Ah, yes, the tying arrangement. That's where things get a bit more technical. E&L claimed that Doman was tying the sale of their green hem fir lumber, you know, the stuff everyone wanted, to these other finished wood products. Basically, they were saying, if you want our awesome green hem fir, you also got to buy this other stuff that maybe you don't really need.
So like a classic buy one, get one, but maybe not so awesome for the buyer.
Exactly. And this can be a big no-no under antitrust law because it can really stifle competition for those tied products.
But that didn't work out for E&L either, right?
Yeah. No, it did not. And this is a good lesson for all those aspiring litigators out there. Specificity matters. The court actually cited the Jefferson Parish case, which sets a really high bar for proving a tying arrangement.
What do you mean by specific?
E&L needed to clearly name those finished wood products. They couldn't just be vague. They had to prove that buyers were actually forced into buying them, like there was no other option. And crucially, they had to show how this arrangement was hurting competition in the market for those specific finished wood products.
So basically, they had to connect all the dots with really hard evidence, not just general claims.
Right. And E&L just didn't do that. Their pleading was considered way too vague, and the court tossed it out.
Makes sense. Okay, what about that Robinson-Patman Act claim?
Yeah.
Wasn't that about price discrimination favoring Sherwood over E&L?
You got it. That's exactly what E&L was alleging. They were basically saying that Doman was giving Sherwood a sweetheart deal, selling them lumber at a lower price than they would have sold it to E&L, which, you know, can be illegal if it hurts competition.
Seems unfair on the surface.
It can be. But the court shut this claim down pretty quickly. Why? because of how E&L was operating as a consignment agent.
Ah, so they were more like a middleman, not a direct buyer.
Right. And the Robinson-Patman Act is really specific. It only protects direct purchasers from price discrimination. Since E&L was selling Doman's lumber on consignment, they didn't qualify.
So even if Doman was giving Sherwood a better price, E&L didn't have the right to sue over it.
Exactly. Their relationship with Doman just didn't fit the legal requirements for a Robinson-Patman claim.
Okay, so no dice there either. I remember they also threw in a claim under the Clayton Act, Section 7, right? Didn't that have something to do with mergers?
Yeah, that one was a bit of a head-scratcher. The Clayton Act, Section 7, is all about preventing mergers and acquisitions that would substantially lessen competition. But in this case, there was no merger at all. Doman just switched distributors.
So like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole?
Pretty much, and the courts saw right through it. They dismissed that Clayton Act claim because it just didn't apply to the situation.
Okay, so we've covered all the federal antitrust claims, and E&L struck out on all of them. But they also had some state law claims in there too, right? Like breach of contract and that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, those were in the mix too. But because the federal claims were all dismissed, the court basically said, you know what? We're not going to deal with these state law issues. You can take those to a different court.
So they punted those down the road.
They did. And specifically, they pointed to the Canadian bankruptcy proceedings that were already happening with Doman as a possible venue for those state law claims to be sorted out.
Okay, so a total victory for Doman and Sherwood on the federal antitrust front. This case really throws a lot of light on some key antitrust principles, doesn't it?
It does. And for all you future lawyers out there, here are the takeaways. First, the rule of reason reigns supreme. When we're talking about vertical restraints like these exclusive distributorship deals, the courts are going to take a hard look at the actual effects on competition in the entire market. Just because one company is hurting doesn't mean the whole market is suffering.
Right. They're not going to jump in just to protect a single business.
Nope. And this case really hammered that home. Second, tying arrangements, you got to be super specific when you're bringing those claims. Who's being forced to buy what? How? And how is that hurting competition in the market for the tied product? Vague claims just won't cut it.
So dot your I's and cross your T's, or the court's going to toss it out.
Exactly. And third, remember, having a monopoly isn't automatically illegal. To nail a company for monopolization, you got to prove they're not just big, they're actively using that power to squash competition. Simply switching distributors, like Doman did, well, that's not enough to prove illegal monopolization.
So size matters, but actions matter more.
Exactly. And I think for law students especially, this case really highlights the importance of understanding that difference between harm to an individual competitor and harm to the competitive process as a whole. The courts, they're laser focused on protecting competition, not specific businesses.
That's a good point. And it seems like E&L, maybe they were so focused on the damage to their own business that they didn't do enough to show how Doman's actions were hurting the entire green hemp for a lumber market.
I think that's a very fair assessment. And to really drive this point home, remember this whole thing was dismissed at the Rule 12b stage. That's super early in the game. E&L's claims weren't even strong enough to make it to discovery. So getting those initial pleadings right, being specific, showing that market-wide harm, it's absolutely crucial.
Yeah, that's a lesson every aspiring lawyer should take to heart.
For sure.
Okay, one final thought before we wrap up.
Sure.
You know, this whole case really makes me think about that tension between protecting small businesses, you know, the little guy, and enforcing this consumer welfare standard, which sometimes means letting the big guys play hardball as long as consumers aren't getting totally screwed. It's
yeah.
Like, what's the ultimate goal of antitrust law, right?
It's a really good question, and this case definitely leans heavily towards that consumer welfare side. The court was primarily concerned with whether Doman's actions were ultimately harming consumers and overall competition. They weren't so worried about whether E&L was taking a hit.
So at the end of the day, what's the big lesson from E&L Consulting versus Doman Industries?
Antitrust law, especially when it comes to vertical restraints and these claims of monopolization, it prioritizes the health of the market as a whole over the fortunes of any single competitor. Harm to a business is not the same as harm to competition. That's the key.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Now, for all of you listeners out there, especially those of you who might be thinking about diving into antitrust law, this case raises some really interesting questions, doesn't it? Like, what are the implications for businesses that are trying to compete in markets dominated by a single powerful player? And how do you actually challenge these exclusive agreements or vertical restraints when the courts are setting such a high bar for proving harm to the entire market? And maybe the most important question of all, what really constitutes true harm to competition, as opposed to just the normal bumps and bruises of a competitive market? These are things worth thinking about as you continue to explore the fascinating world of antitrust law.
Absolutely. Definitely lots to ponder.
So that's it for our deep dive today. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.